Hey guys, it's Mina. During this time of social isolation with no games to watch, ESPN Podcast is still posting a ton of new content from all of your favorite shows. Last week, there are new episodes of ESPN Daily, that's my podcast, The Low Post, The Woj Pod, Sports with Katie Nolan, Ariel Helwani's MMA show, Stupidity, Bill Barnwell show, Baseball Tonight, more, more, more. You can listen to all of these wherever you get your podcast. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts does not wash his hands because he doesn't have any. Speaking of hands, I am delighted to be joined by someone who is lending me one today. This is the second appearance, right? Second?
Yeah,
not
second.
Third? Second?
Second and second. First, okay. First social distance appearance.
That's Kevin Clark from the Ringer NFL show, theringer.com, Slow News Day, iconic video series. I think I've been on that three times.
Three times. Yeah. Only Russillo,
I'm like the Justin
and
Timberlake.
Rubin. Well, Russillo is sort of the, I don't know, like who is on, like he's old reliable. Like he's an incredible guest, but he's also just like,
He's just
like
there.
Joey. Well, no. Like, you know how Johnny Carson used to have just like a rotating panel of like five people and they would just come in and crash.
Yeah.
He's one of those. You're one of those. Mallory Rubin is one of them. Yes. There is a stable of Slow News Day guests that we have that we always know we're going to bring the heat. You are one of them. And Ryan is also, probably because of the frequency, perhaps the top dog in the Slow News Day stable.
We're kind of 1A, 1B, I feel like. That's how I would rank us.
I mean, he's on the leaderboard at number one right now. You've got to – I mean, we've got a long time until this quarantine is over. You can make that up, but I'm just saying you have to close the gap.
By the way, did you notice that I can't say the word podcast? Do you ever struggle with the plural form of the word podcast?
Podcasts? No, I've never struggled
with
that.
It's awkward. It's really awkward. It's not a normal word. I would rather – okay. Someone should replace it with one of those verb or the plural form where it's not an S.
Podcast I.
Or like, you know how like a goose goes to geese? Maybe like a podcast could go to podkeest.
Podcast. I don't think you're helping this. I think you're making this worse. I think you should just probably learn how to say podcasts. I feel like
it's so hard.
The solutions we're coming up with are not good. We'll just say that. If anybody has a better solution, they can tweet us.
And there's so many things, too, where I have to say, listen, wherever you're listening at your podcasts. On that note, you know what I should do? I should just record myself nailing it once and then just hit that recording every time. So that's the only practical solution to all of this. Kevin, I don't know if you saw, but the NFL is continuing on as though nothing is wrong. Everything is still happening.
Business as usual. They use the word traditional. They're gonna have fans in the fall. They are not even considering anything else. The world is on pause or has been canceled in some situations, and the NFL is just gonna keep doing its thing. They didn't delay free agency. They're not gonna delay the draft. They're just not gonna have fans. They'll have it in a studio, kind of a conference call thing. And now they're not even considering changing the season. I just saw a tweet 5 minutes ago that the Falcons said, "Hey, that game in London, still on track, baby."
Woo! Jeez.
If you thought there were going to be any changes, you were wrong.
Well, it's very fortunate for us because we have stuff to talk about over the next few weeks on this show. I'll be digging into the draft, looking at team needs, looking at some of the stars who might go in the first round with some old reliables. But this week, I didn't want to quite get into the draft yet, and I wanted to take some of your questions. So we're doing a mega mailbag episode. I put out a call for questions, many topical ones, and we're going to do our best to answer them. So there's not going to be a mailbag in the middle of this episode. We are just doing all of your questions over the course, starting with one from Batek Matthew. I think Batek might be his last name, although it'd be funny if that was just, could go either way, I guess. Who will succeed more next season? Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
So one of the side effects of no sports is that this is the question that everybody's been asking themselves for like 3 weeks, and we're going to do it for three more months. Like on June 15th, which is when the other sports will start, like we'll have debated this for every day since. So I think that, first of all, I think it's going to be really funny to see just everybody extrapolating 20 years worth of arguments into this one season where Tom Brady's 43 years old and Bill Belichick has like Jarrett Stidham. Brian Hoyer and Andy Dalton at quarterback. Whatever your priors were will be confirmed by this crazy season, right? Where there's no OTAs and barely any training camp and all that stuff, right? Okay. But if I had to guess, Bill Belichick is the most adaptable mind in history of football. And no one comes up with more backup plans. No one tailors his needs quite like Bill Belichick, and no one figures out how to make the most of a bad situation than Bill Belichick. Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time, but he relies on being able to play quarterback. And at 43 years old, that we're in uncharted waters. At some point, may not even be this year, maybe next year, that goes away. And he cannot do what Belichick does and come up with 500 other things. So I think that being a coach, you'll always have more staying power than being a player because there's no physical side to it. So right. I would go with Belichick.
Yeah. I mean, in a vacuum, absent any of the 1,000 variables that you alluded to that enter any NFL season, any NFL team, the coach is obviously in a better position than the aging quarterback. And it's not necessarily a referendum on who is more important during the course of their dynasty. That said, Tom Brady is on a better team right now. I was just talking to someone about this. I think Chris Godwin might be one of the best receivers he's ever played with, certainly non-Gronk division, like the last 5 or 6 years.
I would say there's a case you made that Mike Evans is in that discussion as well. I think they're both really good. He is on a better offense than the Patriots had last year. I don't think that the Bucs are going to have a top three defense. The Patriots for the first 10 weeks of last season were on a historic pace, and I think that they can replicate that. I think that they're both going to have success. I think they're both going to thrive. Like, I don't think that one is going to flop.
You think the Pats are going to thrive?
Well, I think
even
that
if they don't,
I think they can win 10 games. I don't know. Thrive being relative here. I don't think either of them are going to win the Super Bowl. You know, I was listening to one of the PFF podcasts the other day, and I think it was Eric Eager was like, if I could make any bet, it would be that neither of these guys are going to make another Super Bowl. And I think that if you were to play this out from a probability standpoint, that's probably the most likely thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think either of these guys are going to seriously contend this year. I don't think either of them will get to 13 or 14 wins. I think that they'll both be solid this year. And when I say thrive, I mean they'll probably both win 10 games, quite frankly.
I do think if the Pats got Cam Newton and he was first half of 2018 Cam Newton, they win the division. And that's obviously a big if, right? We don't know anything about Cam Newton and his health. I do think they could win the division, and they're not as good as, I wouldn't say they were like in the Chiefs territory necessarily, but I think they would be a top three AFC team. Again, if you get that version of Cam Newton, cause I was looking at some of their losses on defense, Kevin, you know, thinking through, okay, well, this defense was so good last year, obviously declined a bit towards the end. How likely is it that they're going to regress? Yeah, they lost Van Noy, Collins, Shelton, Dron Harmon. They re-signed McCourty. You know, given how scheme dependent it is and the talent that they're able to retain, I don't think that they're likely to be significantly worse. So again, that it's all contingent on if they had a lot of upside at the quarterback position, I still think they could be a contender.
I would like to point out that last year they had Tom Brady, and I don't think they were on the Chiefs plane, nor do I think they were on the Ravens plane. They did lose a fairly uninspiring wild card game to the Tennessee Titans and Ryan Tannehill. And that was not a good performance, and the offense never really got going. Part of that was the complete failure to rebuild the weapons and build an infrastructure around Tom Brady. Part of that was that Tom Brady did not have the ability at age 42 to play like he did even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and overcome that lack of weapons. But I think that the problem that both of these teams face, the Bucs and the Patriots, is that there's a clear elite in each conference, and they're not in it. And yeah. I don't think there's much either can do to get into that. Like, I don't think there's a scenario in which the Bucks can get as good as the Saints, let alone the Niners or any of those teams. And I think the same way with the Patriots and the Ravens and the Chiefs. I think that there's, you know, Chris Long was on Slow News Day this week, and we talked a little bit about what the lack of the offseason is going to do to everybody. And we talked a little bit about how the teams like the Ravens and the Chiefs, who are veterans and have cohesion and also aren't going to be sick of football. And the point Long made was, like, when you win a Super Bowl, in a weird way, you're kind of done with football because you just got so much football that you're kind of feeling blah through the offseason, the OTAs and stuff, and you're not going to get that now. And I thought that was an interesting thing. And these guys are going to have an advantage because they have the cohesion. I think if you're trying to go from good to great, this is a very bad year to do it with almost no practice time.
That's interesting. That certainly applies to the Bucks, right? Like, we're all assuming that Tom Brady and Bruce Arians, two of the most experienced football minds in the NFL, can come together. And, you know, Arians can make the obviously necessary adjustments to his offense, which is not, you know, well suited for Tom Brady. We've talked about this a million times, but this is not a good year to do any of that. As you point out, this is not a good year for a defense that was rising.
It's not a good year.
Good
in general.
Last year. It's not a good year. It is funny though, by the way, with the Saints, like there's a question later about the Vikings and what a bad offseason they've had. And we'll talk about that and some of the losses there. And as I was kind of looking at the roster and thinking through it, I suddenly had that like a flashback, like they waxed the Saints. Like, yeah, that actually happened. Not that long ago. So I don't know. I'm super optimistic about the Saints too. I continue to put them at the top of lists. I like their offseason. I like a lot of the additions they made, but I don't know. I think we might be a little bit overly optimistic about them.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think a lot of it comes down to coaching. I think Bruce Arians is a really good coach, but I think that one of the things, and this actually is a point for Belichick, in the 2011 season, Belichick basically changed his defense around because he knew that the lockout was going to change how people learn and their capacity to learn a lot in a short amount of time because there was no OTAs. It was limited training camp. I've written about it a bunch just how innovative that was. And I think that Sean Payton is another good coach where, like, he's going to be able to figure out how to approach this. And Drew Brees is, you know, a good enough quarterback to where, even if he does, you know, decline because he's in the Brady range as far as age goes, that I think that they have the intellectual capacity to just, like, get this offense rolling with very limited, they have so much chemistry that they're going to be able to get this offense rolling with very limited time. Brady and chemistry is those, and, like, no one values cohesion with their receivers like Tom Brady. I mean, the stories I've heard from receivers are unbelievable about just, you know, he'll be one half an inch off a throw, a 15-yard throw on June 30th at UCLA or USC, and he's furious at himself. Like, he is very, very into his precision stuff. And if he can't work with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin like that, then I think that puts him at a disadvantage until July or August.
Yeah, part of the reason I mentioned Godwin and not Evans is, you know, he's one of my, like, favorite players in the NFL right now. I think he just does everything well. I don't think that's true. I think Mike Evans is more of a freakish talent, you know, and obviously an incredible athlete. But Chris Godwin is like if I built a receiver in a lab for Brady, it might be Chris Godwin right now. And I think we'll see how that translates into sort of chemistry you're describing. I mean, they have so much chemistry that Brady stole his number, so that's a good start. But yeah.
Is he not getting anything
Bucks,
for that
man,
exchange?
I don't think so. Or if he is, they didn't say so.
There was a punter. I don't know if it was Sean Landetta or somebody else, but he kept having numbers of Giants stars. Like, he had Eli Manning's number, and then I think it was Landetta, and then he had Plaxico Burress's number. And he just kept getting bought out every single year. And I remember him talking about, this is like, I was in middle school or something. And he was talking about how, like, he got his outdoor kitchen paid for by Eli Manning. He got a trip to Disney World because of Plaxico Burress. Getting cash for your number is a very good tradition. And if Godwin got screwed, I'm protesting.
I love the idea of an NFL player sort of, insider trading numbers or just trying to always buy low on like good numbers that, or maybe like he knows, oh, we're drafting Cam Newton. He likes number one, you know, I mean, some years ago.
Like if you were a Bengals player last year, just try to get Burrow's number like in November. I'd love to switch to this if possible.
There's a Bengals question here. I'm excited to get to that one. But then that's speaking of those teams, we're going to get away from the Brady talk. There's a question about the Giants. Ooh, I like that. I haven't talked about the Giants in a long time. Let's see. This is from Anastasia Williams. How will the Giants find a way to screw up the draft with the fourth overall pick? I know they will. Okay. So obviously this is contingent on what happens with Tua, who are now being told can start day one. We'll see about that. The Giants, are probably going to go either offensive or defensive line. Now, is that, unless they trade down, but setting that aside, do you think that Gettlemaning and getting, I don't know, Tristan Wirfs or, you know, like a big guy, do you think that, because they actually do really need an offensive lineman or they also need an edge rusher. I'm surprised they didn't end up paying one. Do you view that as screwing up?
Well, so first of all, Jay Glazer reports yesterday that Dave Gettleman has to turn it around this season or I guess he would get fired. That's the implication. He has to turn it around this season. And there were a lot of people who were like, oh, that's the worst thing you can do is tell a GM that he has one season to turn it around. Well, how is Dave Gettleman going to get worse exactly? Like, what is Dave Gettleman in panic mode and how is he any worse than what he's been the last 2 years? Okay. Like that's number one about Dave Gettleman. How did they screw this up? Well, first of all, he said he's open for business with this pick. He's never traded down, so you sort of worry about his concept of trade value. You worry that he might get Bill O'Brien somehow and end up, you know, giving up this pick for a third-round pick or something. And then I think that I agree with you that maybe they go interior lineman or some sort of what Dave Gettleman calls a hog molly, and I think that can be okay.
Derek Brown, that would be how he screws this up.
Yeah,
Derek Brown.
Is Derek Brown not bad?
No, he's not, but good. At four?
I mean, turning the pick in is a good step for the Giants, okay? Like, Daniel Jones was not a good pick. I feel like this is all relative. I feel like someone like Derek Brown is a replacement level pick for the Giants. I don't think that's necessarily screwing it up.
They should trade down.
Yes, assuming, of course they should. I'm just worried about Dave Gettleman learning about trade value while working from home.
If they do this digital thing, he's 1000% the GM who leaves auto draft on. They come up, he's in the bathroom. And they take like a guard that no one's ever heard of.
Or he does that intentionally.
They paid James Bradbury a ton of money. Or he does it intentionally.
$15 million.
Yeah, they didn't really have a lot of money for James Bradbury. They tagged Leonard Williams, which was, anytime you can tag your run-stopping defensive lineman, you got to do it after you've traded for him. They signed Blake Martinez and Kyle Fackrell, which is, I thought, kind of interesting. Nobody really left. I mean, you know, there weren't that many people to leave. I like the whole defense needs to be rebuilt, right? So like a fun pick would be like an Isaiah Simmons, you know, like some multi-purpose Derwin James and Ishii player but the reality is they have just so many needs at every level on defense that I'm not really sure you can go wrong. It all depends on positional value for them.
They even needed GM.
DeCastillo 414 asks, who was your favorite and least favorite personality in the Tiger King? Okay. There's three right answers for favorite or best. And it's the three people who work for the Tiger King. I don't remember their names. I think Kelsey with the arm, the guy who kind of looks like SVP with the legs, and then the guy with the long blonde hair. They are all the best. Do we agree?
They're
the most likable people. They're the only good people in the entire show.
I agree with you. You said Kelsey is the one with the arm injury. Is that correct?
I believe Saf, maybe. Saf was the nickname, her nickname. Yeah.
Okay. I think that everybody, you can empathize a little tiny bit with Joe Exotic a little bit. And this was talked about this week, but at the end of the day, he's not a very good person.
A horrible person.
And I understand that in the cast of characters that he's up against, that you can come away with it feeling for Joe Exotic, and maybe Jeff Lowe should be in prison. Carol, the doc certainly has skeletons in his closet, but I feel like the most redeeming characters are the people who work for Joe. Those are the people I felt for the most. They were just trying to hang out, have a good life, and feed some big cats.
The worst villain. So I think of the big three, or big four, if you count Jeff, the worst is Antle. I actually think he's the most dangerous of all of them. I really dislike the guy who was like a narc, Jarrettson or whatever. I disliked him a lot too. I'd put it between those two, least favorite.
Yeah. Doc and Jeff Lowe. I've known a little too many Jeff Lowe's in my day. Like, I know these people. I know the people. They're at bars in Tampa, and they're just there, and they're wearing Affliction, and they're wearing Oakley, and they're wearing and they're trying to run some scam. And it's I know
Kevin is from Florida.
Yeah.
For those of you, so you are
plenty of them. Plenty of them in Orlando too. They're always running some scam. They've always got it. Different business plan for you. It's unbelievable.
Where does he buy his clothes? That's the whole time I was wondering, like, where does he get those shirts and those, like, washes of jeans? Like, where do people like that shop?
I mean, I think you can go into the mall and get them pretty easily.
Really? But, like, where? Yeah, what stores? I don't – they're not at Zara. Like, H&M.
He's not going to Zara.
Kirk Serious Face asks – which pre-2000 pass rusher would you like to see play in today's game? I've had Derek Thomas on my mind lately. Mm. Guy that I have been watching a lot lately, for various reasons, looking for comps and also just trying to understand certain pass rushing moves, for me is Reggie White. And I think he would really thrive in today's NFL because he's so complete, right? Like, he was gigantic and fast, but could also stop the run. And he didn't have just like one move, although the hump move is kind of his famous thing. He had such an array of moves that I feel like he would be really successful in today's NFL.
The little nugget about Derek Thomas is that Von Miller is obsessed with Derek Thomas and his YouTubes. And I spent some time with Von Miller a couple of years ago, and he said that he not only does he sit and watch Derek Thomas as a pass rusher, but he also was obsessed with the way Derek Thomas talked about pass rushing because Derek Thomas said he saw himself as an offensive player on defense in the sense that he was the attacker and not waiting for life to happen around him. And Von Miller uses the same principles. And so it's interesting to me that sort of the pre-2000s pass rushing carries over with Von Miller in 2020. I would have to say Lawrence Taylor only because obviously, you saw the ferocity, and this is all in a vacuum. This is like Lawrence Taylor not being a right. Like this is if you're just taking the player and not the bad parts.
Google it.
Right, and so I think that Bill Belichick stops a press conference if anybody says the name Lawrence Taylor, or heaven forbid, compares somebody to Lawrence Taylor. And I think that if he doesn't.
Yeah,
he doesn't say that stuff lightly. And so I would, having seen him, knowing what he did to offenses, that would be my pick. A legitimate game wrecker.
This one's for you. Outcast Jaw asks, what's Kevin going to do without his barber?
All right. So first of all, your boy saw this one coming. And so I got a haircut right before this whole thing. I got a haircut on like, I don't know, March 10th or something, because I was like, you know what? I was following the news and I was like, you know, Bill Ackman shorted the markets because he saw this coming and made $2 billion. Okay. I saw it coming and I got a haircut. All right. So, those are two wins for me and Bill Ackman. And so I think that, I've thought about this. If it goes a couple months, I'm just going to grow my hair out. When I was in high school, I had hair down to my shoulders a little longer and I pulled it off. Okay. The only problem, Nina, and
wait, like a parted in the middle or what?
No, just like, Just like kind of like regular kind of skater punk long hair, like beachy surfer long hair. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. It just kind of flowed down. I didn't style it in any way. And so, I would say that the only thing I can't do is go increasingly vertical on the hair. At some point I have to shut it down and go down.
It's pretty tall now.
It's pretty tall it's and pretty that tall. Can't, I mean, that can't sustain itself.
Yeah. Right. Like how tall that can't really sustain. Go. It's like, yeah, it's like buildings that, you know, like, oh, we're building the world's greatest skyscraper, yeah. But then it starts to make you nervous at a certain point. My hair is so long.
What are you
doing? My
do?
Hair is always long. I'm thinking about buying like scissors online and asking my husband. My hair is not hard to cut. It's just a straight line, right? But I don't want to put that pressure on Nick to cut it. And I don't want to do it by myself.
I'm not going to cut Emily's hair and she's not going to cut mine. I haven't actually talked to her about that, but I'm not holding the scissors and I'm just going to grow it out. When I was in high school, because I had long blonde hair, my two best friends had long blonde hair. And one thing I did not realize that was going to happen that did for an entire summer is whenever we'd go someplace, people would yell Hansen at us because we looked like Hansen because we all had long blonde hair.
Hansen's amazing. Which quarterback, I'm just audible, it's my question. Which quarterback would be the funniest to see with long hair and why is it obviously Kirk Cousins?
Kirk would be great. I'm trying to think.
Jared Goff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which ones would go like full Silver Lake, like man bun?
Oh, Goff. I feel like Goff could actually pull it off because he's kind of got like California.
I think Matt Ryan would be funny with a man bun.
Matt Ryan's wife just tweeted a video of him at home wearing his casual wear. Close your eyes. Imagine Matt Ryan. It's exactly what you're thinking. Like a three-quarter fleece, right? With like kind of like Docker-looking pants.
Is the three-quarter fleece has a golf club logo on it, is my guess?
It doesn't, but it basically does.
It does. The golf logo is implied.
This is a question that I am interested in asking you because you and I talked about this on So News Day, and you sort of gave an answer to it that surprised me. This question is from Robert H9903456 4. Apparently not a bot. I'm not surprised when people who are not bots have long strings of numbers in their handles. He wants to know, are the Buffalo Bills on the verge of ruling the AFC East for the foreseeable future? So I was surprised. I don't know if you remember, Ken, I was surprised because you kind of suggested that the Pats would still...
I said if the Pats got Andy Dalton, I would pick them to win the division.
Yeah.
That is what I said.
Yeah.
Based on the talent that's still there.
Like a Pikachu face, because I was thinking of the Bills.
Right. And so that's based on having the best coach of all time and then roster talent and Andy Dalton being league average, I guess, is what you'd call it. I think that the Bills are an amazing roster building situation. I think that they are good. Almost, they're not. Brandon Bean has done such a great job. Maybe second only. I don't want to, in the last 2 years, as far as just rebuilding, maybe second only to the Colts, just as far as hitting on a bunch of different personnel things. I mean, I think Eric DaCosta is obviously in the mix there, but that's a longer term thing. I think that Brandon Bean has done. They took a huge dead cap charge to build up to what they have now. One of the biggest in history. I think the Dolphins surpassed it last year. But their ability to retool and not tank and basically not have any excuses and have a winning team in 2 years is unbelievable to me. And if you're looking for like how to rebuild on the fly, you're gonna look at Buffalo right now. I think that I don't want to get in a Josh Allen thing right now,
but that's the thing, right? Like you and I,
that's
we can
thing.
Say this
he's
team
the
is
thing.
A case study. They've done everything right. They won the offseason. Holy smokes. This offense is perfect. Yada, yada, yada. But if Josh Allen doesn't take another step, and I do believe he took a step last season, then they're not going to rule anything, right? They're going to be a good team.
I think that he has to get,
like,
yeah,
how good
he has
does
to get significantly be? Better.
That's
yeah,
the question.
I think he has to be. Yeah, I think if Josh Allen became, and I don't necessarily think this is possible this year, but if Josh Allen became the 10th best quarterback in football this year, they'd probably win 14 games. Am I wrong about that?
No, I'm not. I mean, We did winners and losers in free agency last week, and I talked about the Bills and all the acquisitions and how much I like them. And, you know, pointing to this wide receiver group, the offensive line, I think the defense is still going to be good. If you as a quarterback can't win in the Bills situation right now, they should not extend you, right? Like so many teams, Jets, do not have the information they need to evaluate their quarterbacks based on the teams they've built around them. The Bills do. They have a perfect control now, right? Like, this is on Josh Allen. So they'll know. They should know. Often we see teams wait too long to make that decision. But I think it's a perfect scenario. I've said with him, to me, like, the upside could be, you know, when Cam, who I do think is probably still the best possible comp for him for upside. I'm not saying he's the comp. I'm saying he's like the upside comp. When Cam would have like a season where statistically he would finish maybe like just outside the top 10, but you still knew he could win games. That's what I think they need out of Josh Allen.
Right. Do you think that's going to happen?
Based off of last season? No, but I do believe quarterbacks get better, and I do think he got better last season.
I think he got better too. I think there's a ceiling on him, and I don't know. I think the Bills are going to be good this year. I think that they're. If I were to guess right now, that they're going to make the playoffs again, and this time they're going to beat the Texans.
Everybody makes the Texans playoffs.
Taking talent away.
All you have to do is not throw to a fullback 50 yards downfield. Dennis Fogarty wants to know, who would you rather have as your GM for the next 5 years? Bill O'Brien, Dave Gettleman, or Joe Exotic? It's a great question.
Wow. So Joe Exotic is in prison. Does this mean that he's not able to make
like
transactions,
no,
or only able to make it, like, yeah, is that like having no GM?
Great question.
I would choose Dave Gettleman because Dave Gettleman at least has some hits on his track record and has some kind of drafting ability. And they're both one of them renounced Josh Norman's rights for no reason the year after they won the Super Bowl. They both are sort of questionable in how they value things, but Dave Gettleman is closer to the model of kind of what I would like in this situation, which is just, he doesn't do much. He doesn't trade out of things. He just kind of takes guys. Dave Gettleman would inflict the least amount of damage on the team. Cause I actually think that Joe Exotic from prison would make some irrational moves.
I feel like he'd do a lot of like marketing stuff. But I don't know if he would be interested in the day-to-day. Speaking of Joe Exotic, next question is from Matt Lib. How will you explain to younger generations in 10 years why Joe Burrow is nicknamed Joe Exotic? I think, by the way, Joe Exotic's been officially canceled. He should have been canceled already, but today I think there was some video, and I think it kind of drove the final nail into the Tiger coffin. He really wants to know, how would you grade the Bengals offseason so far? And I do want to talk about this because the Bengals offseason has been so weird.
Here come the Bengals.
It's like, what? Now, I don't love
Trey Waynes.
3 years, $42 million. Oh, man. I don't like that deal. I like the DJ Reed signing. I've always liked him.
The DJ Reed signing is fine. I will say it's very funny. It's very kind of Simpsons monkey paw that the Bengals finally got involved in free agency. And I wonder if fans who were calling for that for years now regret ever calling for it.
AJ Green was tagged, but he's not been extended, right? Just tagged at the moment, I believe.
That's correct. Just tagged. Trey Waynes, DJ Reader, they're at least going out and spending. They are trying to build an infrastructure around Joe Burrow.
It's so crazy. Trey Waynes, 3 years, $42 million. Mackenzie Alexander, 1 year, $4 million. The cornerback market is so freaking weird. I have been saying that I think the Bengals are going to be better than people think, because I think people have forgotten how injured they were last year. I mean, yes, they're the Bengals, they haven't been good for a while, and whatever. But they also had good players who weren't playing football. So I think setting aside from Burrow coming in, although again, we'll see, it's never been a worse year to be a rookie quarterback coming into a team. I think, I do think they're just going to naturally be better, because guys will be getting healthy.
So I will say this, the Joe Burrow thing is interesting to me as far as coming in, as you said, in a weird year. Cam Newton came in 2011, and what Mike Shula was able to do was essentially run huge portions of the Auburn offense and make the offense very simple because there wasn't a lot of training camp and OTAs, and it was stuff he was familiar with. And I think that the Bengals should look at that as a template, obviously a different player, but they should run as many LSU plays as they possibly can. And I think that that's the kind of the cheat code for Joe Burrow to get on the same page as the rest of the Bengals. Do not overcomplicate this.
Why couldn't they have hired Joe Brady? I guess it would have been a little too on the nose, but that's what I would have done. I mean,
well, they also have, I mean, I think Zach Taylor wants to call the plays.
That's true.
That's his deal.
Last question before we take a quick break. This one is also for you. CEWM Writes wants to know, I want Kevin's advice for buying Blazers and not blowing the entire bag.
I don't like the implication that I don't blow the entire bag. What is the implication that I don't spend my entire, I don't take my paycheck, I don't even cash it, I just go and sign it over to Paul Smith?
He just wants to know your bargain shopping tips. That's all.
Yeah, no, it's easy. So, It's you just buy everything you can, and when there's the sales that dictate it, let the sales come to you. Don't go out hunting for deals. Like twice a year, the brands you like, whatever they may be, will have insane sales. And when that happens, buy everything that so it's like the Moneyball thing, right? Like Billy Beane's whole rule is if you have to do something, you're screwed. That's the way it is with buying clothes.
Blazers. How many jackets?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. A lot. Because you have to remember is like, I wore a different one on Slow News Day every week, and that was 22. So I would say like, I don't know, like good ones, like 35 probably.
See, so you've kept up wearing them on Slow News Day because it's like your brand now. Like, you know, it's called what it is.
Yeah.
So for me,
I'm going to stop doing that though.
I have a problem because we've been doing these around the home, highly quarantined, you know, kind of videos we call them. And none of my TV, I can't wear any of my TV clothes on them because I look like an idiot, right? Like I can't wear a blazer in my home on highly quarantined. It just looks strange. So I actually don't know what to wear on any of these videos. I don't know.
I'm wearing blazers nice shirts.
But you're your own, like I'm with two other people. And then if they're not dressed up, I look overly dressed up. I don't know.
Just let it rip. I'm going to get away. I realized at the end of last year, the jacket thing is completely unsustainable. I just happened to luck out with some purchases that were kind of in bulk because doing what I just said. Like that, you really have to get lucky on some of that stuff. And so I think I'm just going to wear like a different tie each week next year. Like I got some nice ties when I was in England.
Ties. You're going to move on to ties.
That's where I'm shifting to next year. Yeah. There's some great tie shops in London and I hit those hard.
Whew. Let's take a quick break. Life today is kind of a lot. It forces us to always be on. But every now and then, it's important to just stop, crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light, and chill. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's made to chill. Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment. Made to chill. Coors Light is brewed with a 3-step cold process. Cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. So it's actually made to chill. The mountains on Coors Light's cold-activated bottles and cans turn blue when they are chilled to perfection. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102 calories. That's why Coors Light is the one to choose when you need a moment of chill. So when you want to reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Whoa! All right, we've got two questions about the Raiders, so I'm kind of looping them together. Mac Campos, okay. 86, wants to know if we think Marcus Mariota can take Derek Carr's starting spot. And then Raider 80 asks, how long will the Raiders suffer with Gruden as coach? Hot take, John Gruden's a good coach. I feel like people, everybody kind of goofed on him so hard during his first couple of years running the team, you know, and then like saying some outlandish stuff and the Mac trade, which in hindsight doesn't look so bad, and this and that, that they forgot he is really good at coaching offense.
Yeah, so I think the thing we all overlook, including myself, is that this whole offensive McVay revolution, well, that was John Gruden.
Yeah.
He birthed that in a lot of different ways, not just the fact that he was their boss, but some of the offensive principles. I know Mike Shanahan gets a lot of credit for that, but John Gruden should as well. Can Marcus Mariota beat out Derek Carr? Yes, because he's John Gruden's quarterback.
Yep.
John Gruden sours on quarterbacks really quickly. He has bad relationships with a lot of them. Or at one point did and maybe patched it up afterwards. But unless you're Rich Gannon, John Gruden's going to be really hard on you and be looking to replace you. And so I think that's, you're always in danger of being benched if you're John Gruden's quarterback.
Even if you live
next door. And even if you live next door to him, he will, he goes through quarterbacks. That's what he does.
As a Derek Carr fantasy owner in my dynasty league with Danny Kelly, in which I won beating fantasy guru Danny Kelly last year, I own Derek Carr. So I really hope this doesn't happen. I have said on this podcast, and I believe Derek Carr was fine last season. Unfortunately, I think we're kind of reaching the point where his risk aversion is a feature and not a bug and isn't something that can be fixed by adding weapons. But he will give them competent quarterback play. I think I like what the Raiders did in free agency on defense in particular. I've mentioned I love the linebackers they added. I think Corey Littleton's one of the most underrated players in the NFL. I like the Nassib signing. But they didn't really give Carr much on his side of the ball, unless you count Nelson Aguilar. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders use
should not count Nelson Aguilar.
I wouldn't be surprised if they use one of their first round picks. They've got 12 and 19 on a CeeDee Lamb or a Jeudy, whichever one of the elite receivers kind of falls to that spot. So I think to go back to the original question, I don't think Derek Carr is going to lose his job because I think he's going to play good enough. I don't think he's going to play poorly enough to be replaced by Mariota.
I agree. If I were to bet on who starts the most games next year, it would be Derek Carr. But I think that you cannot ever count out the possibility of John Gruden souring
his love for Mariota as well. Different sort of question from Three Traits. I am a middle school teacher from New York hoping to spread optimism to my students in time of uncertainty. Are there three traits you lean on in times of adversity? Thank you. Stay healthy. Okay. I'm just going to do one trait because three is a lot. It's okay if you do nothing. It's okay to have, this is something I've kind of come to terms with. It's okay if you have a day and it's just a fail of a day. Like you just do not get any of the things done or do a bad job on them. I'm trying to be less hard on myself about lost days.
Okay.
That's mine.
So I actually I agree with you in one way, which is that if nothing happens in a day, that's okay. What I think about these times, and one of the things that helps, I recommend this, break a couple bones in your life and just have a time of complete inactivity, and you'll be totally ready for these sorts of lulls in your life, in the sense that I got hit by a car twice, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, once each. And I couldn't, especially the second one, I couldn't leave the house for a month. So I've done all this stuff. Okay. And I think that the number one thing I learned during those two things is have just general goals set up and be working towards them. And it could be anything. It could be read 10 books. It'll make me smarter. It could be learn something that I didn't know. It could be learn something new every day or three things every day, whatever it is, just try to meet those goals. Or it could be I want to get in shape and lose 10 pounds or whatever it is. Just have kind of more abstract goals. Don't have specific goals. Don't be I want to make $1 million during this break, because then you'll be disappointed when it doesn't happen. But just try to have some self-improvement goals and be working towards those every day. And you'll find yourself much more open to overcoming whatever it is.
Right. Cause this is not a time where you can say, all right, in 3 weeks, I have this big meeting or opportunity because those don't exist right now. I think you can do both of the things we just described at the same time, by the way. I think it's okay to
come out of this. Yeah. I agree. Come out of this being the number one goal for everybody should be come out of this being a better person, and everything else will flow through that. Whether that means smarter, whether that means more disciplined, whether that means being in better shape, is just figure out what you want to get better at, because all of us are on pause right now. So come out of this whole thing better than when you came into it.
You know who's been doing that?
And stay healthy. Wash your hands.
Been doing that is one Baker Mayfield, who's been working out a lot, posting videos. And that brings us to our next question from Jacob Ansi. I think this is a great question, Kevin. I'm very curious to see what your answer is. I have been mulling it over. Mm-hmm. Who will have a better record, the Browns or the Vikings? Now, setting aside schedules, because I don't want to think through that. Who's a better team? I think this is you could really argue either way. God. So let's start with the Vikings. Because as I mentioned, they lost. It's weird because they didn't lose great, aside from Diggs. A lot of the players they lost are Rhodes, Lanes, Joseph's fine.
Linval Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, Everson Griffin's still out there. We'll see what happens with him. Sindejo, I think they tagged.
Yeah, he's not coming back.
They tagged Anthony Harris, who's good. But just the collective loss of talent is remarkable on this team. So you got that, and they did keep Kirk Cousins. Then, they have two first round picks now, right? Because they got the one back, they got the one from the Bills. So they're going to have to get a cornerback and a wide receiver, having lost all the cornerbacks. Then you got the Browns, who didn't really lose anyone. They added some interesting pieces. Conklin being sort of the centerpiece of that. Of course, Case Keenum, who could forget. Austin Hooper, which I think has interesting ramifications for their offense. And then I thought the Carl Joseph signing was interesting. So on a plus minus, thing, the Browns had a better offseason, I think, undeniably. As much as, signing free agency doesn't always work out in the long term. But just from a pure talent perspective, who do you think is – I think the Vikings were clearly a much better team last year. I think they've got a quarterback who's been playing much better football. Who do you think is the better team in 2020?
Do you remember when my boss, Bill Simmons, had a metric that he invented called wins above Raheem Morris?
No.
Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
It was that he decided, in the same way that baseball has like wins above replacement or whatever, he decided that Raheem Morris was such a bad coach that you just had to throw away the results, and that essentially, and this, he basically applied it to a bunch of different coaches, where it's like, sometimes coach is just so bad that anybody will be an improvement. I feel like we weren't wrong last year, all of us, in hyping up the Browns. I went all in on the Browns. You went all in on the Browns. We did a lot of content celebrating the Browns. Okay. And I don't feel like we were way off. We were off on Freddie Kitchens, is what I think. Odell Beckham is still a good player. Baker Mayfield is still a good player. The talent is there. Myles Garrett is still a good pass rusher, okay? The talent was there. The two things we overlooked was Freddie Kitchens as a first-time coach and the offensive line. They solved both of those problems. Are they going to be a 14-win team? No, they're not. But can they win 10 games, 11 games? Absolutely.
Yeah.
My guess would be the Browns.
They still need a left tackle, I think. They brought in the best tackle available. They didn't need to add any pieces on the offense. The Hooper thing is going to be interesting, I think, schematically, because I think Stefanski is going to use him in some interesting ways. I thought it was a bit of an overpay, but I'm curious to see how he factors into that offense. I've talked a lot about Baker and his weird decline last year, like how rare it is to see quarterbacks become less accurate their second year. It's just a very unusual progression. I think you're absolutely right. A lot of that has to do with the offensive line. Some of it's his fault. Just because the offensive line contributed to his general lack of pocket presence doesn't mean it's the offensive line's fault. But putting more talented players will change that. Having a better coach will change that. So I am optimistic about them. I am nervous about the Vikings. I think it's close, But I kind of lean Browns too. I did you see, I think Cowherd had the Vikings as like the second best roster in the NFL. Right?
The second best roster.
Mm-hmm. No comment. All right. Jess Barth. She's got a few questions. We're just gonna take one. She's a Dolphins fan. Should we really take Tua or wait a year? Take Tua.
So I'm confused at the framing of this question. Is Tua supposed to be available at 5 when they pick, or are they going to trade up in this situation? Because I continue to believe that someone.
Oh, they're going to trade.
I don't think Tua is going to be picked in the fifth with the fifth pick. I think he's going to be picked the way that we as a punditry and a league overrate every quarterback to the point they all get overdrafted. And all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that Tua, there's going to be three teams who pass on Tua and don't trade out from a quarterback needy team. So they're going to sell a lot in order to get the assets for this. Okay. And then that leaves the door open for the Chargers to do it, Panthers to do it, whatever the hell. I mean, like,
this is your time. This is your time.
Is
you're going to be too good this year.
So I would do it. I would do it and
have assets
and figure the rest out later, depending on the asking price. But
one can compete with them. People talk about the Chargers who pick behind them. They're not going to leapfrog the Dolphins. The Dolphins have like 3,000 picks. I mean, they could, but they don't. I'm just saying, like, they can outbid whatever team. I mean, take him if you don't like him. Obviously, I think he's good.
The Lions and the Redskins both need defensive studs. They'll both think they need defensive studs to sort of kickstart their rebuild here.
Right.
Whether that's Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, or whatever. They can't drop that far down or else they're going to lose those guys. And so I think 5 makes the most sense if either 2 or 3 is open for business.
Question is from CEO of
Take
Matt.
Two.
Which Tiger King character is which NFL head coach? Past or present? Oh, I didn't see past or present. Okay, so you and
You take this one.
Okay, Doc Antle. I was doing present, and I had trouble with Joe Exotic because there's no wild man coach right now. I gave Doc Antle Sean Payton. I gave Carol Baskin Bill Belichick, but I did not. I looked across the NFL landscape, and I did not see a Joe Exotic. But now that I know, I can do past or present. Rex Ryan, step right up.
So I went the other way. I'm going with like a Tyler Perry situation where every character is played by the same person, okay, and it's Bruce Arians.
I love Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians pulls off every single character. We're obviously divorcing the characters from their actions. Like, no coach was in a questionable murder case or is going to jail or anything like that. So this is just about who would do the best in these situations, running a zoo or, you know, what have you. And I feel like Bruce Arians playing every character is the way to go. Kind of a Nutty Professor situation.
Jason Kirkham, we'll just take a few more, asks, how do you think Mitch Trubisky will handle the competition at quarterback with Foles in Chicago? Have the Bears done enough to be a major contender? No, for the second one. I do not think they're a major contender. But
how's he going to handle it? He's going to lose.
Let me ask you this. The question that to me isn't how Trubisky's going to handle it. It's how are the Bears going to handle it? Are they going to let Nick Foles start week one?
Is anyone – listen, there are no winners from a shortened offseason or whatever. But I feel like the Bears get to just say like, ah, geez, it was a weird year. Like, we can't really have a competition. Sorry, Mitch, we're going to go with Nick Foles. They don't have to go on like the May 1st charade of this competition is open. And Mitchell Trubisky, you know, showed us a lot last year and we're going to give him every chance to win this job. They don't have to do that. They can just – Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy can just roll up on July 29th if we get there and say, oh, sorry, ran out of time. Nick Foles is QB1.
Yeah, I can see that playing. It's so hard to like game this out without knowing, like, is there going to be a preseason? What's the preseason going to be like? Listen, a few months ago, I didn't even think that they were going to let him compete, right? Or make, you know, bring in legitimate competition. Then I thought, well, it's going to be like a Mariota.
He's going to be allowed in the facility.
Yeah. Or even talked about in front of Mitch, put on, you know, like TVs. So the sort of trickle of information and rhetoric ever since the trade has all been leading towards Nick Foles actually getting an opportunity, which is freaking fascinating. And you know, you've heard a million times, he's got the relationship, he knows Nagy's offense from Kansas City, yada, yada. It matters now for the reasons Kevin and I have been talking about. So we'll see. Now, as far as the team being a contender, I will take an L here. I thought the Bears defense would regress more than they did last year. I think they outperformed my expectations. I always say great defenses regress, right? But that defense was better than I thought last year. I think they didn't lose a ton of talent, but I think, you know, some of these losing players around the margins is going to hurt. They don't have a first round pick. Unless Foles catches fire, which I don't know if you've heard, but that's happened before, it's going to be a rough, tough uphill climb for them.
Yeah. And I think the Packers have a really good roster, and I think that it's going to be hard. I think the Packers win that division. I'm not ruling out the Bears contending for the division. Yeah. I think that for the division, not for, I don't.
Like, if Foles catches fire, sure.
And I think that he's all he needs to be. If that defense is good, all he needs to be is average to above average, and which he's shown an ability to do. And I think that they can squeeze out 10 games. I mean, so much of that, I think it's the 8-11 wins thing. So much of it is just a couple of breaks and, you know, a little fumble luck here or there. And I think that they're in the mix in that zone.
Take three more questions. This is from SV Tamer. Would you rather only laugh at inappropriate times or never laugh again ever? Like your body doesn't allow you to laugh. That's a great question. Never ever.
It depends what line of work you're in.
I mean, it would be killer. Imagine you turn on the TV. It's around the horn. We're talking about something serious like the coronavirus. And all of a sudden I'm like, I can't do that. Yeah. I can't have that. I would choose never again, but I would smile a lot as a workaround. Big smile.
Yeah, you'd have a workaround. Or, you know, the Seinfeld episode where Jerry's girlfriend never laughed, but just said, that's funny. Like, you could become one of those people. You would just be like, that's funny.
Comedy people do that all the time.
And then that's how you would. Comedy people very rarely laugh. Hard to make them laugh.
I know. And then you feel terrible. And that's how everyone will feel about me in this new future.
You feel totally unfunny. Remember, it's not us. We're funny. It's them. I think you have to pick never again, only because there's just too many situations where it would ruin you for life to laugh in the wrong situation.
Here's a random one. Thor Woodenson asks, hey, Mina, Lenny, and Kevin, hope you're well. Any idea where Josh Rosen ends up? I think the Chargers pick up Chief from the Dolphins during the draft. I'm a Chiefs fan. That's not really worried about the Chargers. Josh Rosen, man. I don't know why the Pats don't take a flyer on him. That's what I'd do.
I have some ideas. Like mine? Because he's not very good.
Oh, but who cares? Pats.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I'm not. If you got beat up by Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'm worried about you, okay? Yeah. I think that he might end up, I think he's probably going to be a backup somewhere. Probably not. They like him in Miami. They've enjoyed him down there. I was down there in December reporting some stuff and they kind of enjoyed him there. It wasn't like he was pouting or anything. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back to Miami. Can I ask you a question? Why is Miami not linked more with either Cam or Jameis?
I guess because everyone assumes they're going all, well, because they've got Fitz.
They're going to have a quarterback.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, but I feel like if Cam Newton becomes cheap enough to have someone like that, I think Jameis is probably a bad idea. I think Jameis needs to go to a place like New Orleans or Kansas City.
Pittsburgh or something. Although,
I guess New Orleans is, whatever. And unfortunately, most of those places have backup quarterbacks, but a place where you can learn from an offensive guru and get right in the system, right? Like San Francisco would be amazing if they weren't full of quarterback. Could just Kyle Shanahan teaching Jameis Winston what to do. Cam Newton is a different situation where he either needs to go to a place like the Chargers where he can start, you know, whenever he's healthy, or go to some place that's going to just have a ton of patience with him and let him get healthy, and that would be the Dolphins as well. Where's Josh Rosen going to go? My guess is he stays in Miami this year.
if Cam is healthy and can be had for nothing, there's like 15 teams that should sign him. What about Jackson?
All of them should. Every team should have. Every team, when I said last week, every team should at least place a call. And people were like, he's going to demand too much money. Well, that's the point of calling.
Right. And at a certain point,
is to find out if he's going to demand too much money.
His other option is not playing football, which maybe that's an actual thing he's considering. I don't know. The whole thing's been very weird. Take two more. Why do the Jets – oh, I'd like to do the name of the person. Sorry. This comes from MJM21497. Why do the Jets hate Sam Darnold? I kind of alluded to this earlier. It bums me out because I continue to think Sam Darnold shows flashes of great promise, continue to think he's in a terrible situation. The Jets came into this offseason with a ton of cap space, and I do not understand what they did. I just don't get it. Explain.
Why did the Jets hate their own fans? Why do the Jets hate blank and go in a lot of different directions? Do they hate Sam Darnold? Yeah. Go ahead.
No, poor guy.
They hired Adam Gase to be his head coach. They let Robbie Anderson walk for a pretty manageable contract.
Nothing.
I just don't understand what they're addressing the lines. I understand this. So Joe Douglas came from Philadelphia and he came from Baltimore before that, where they were tough on the lines. And I totally understand. That's a way to win football games. And I think we probably overlook it too often. But that's not going to get Sam Darnold everywhere he needs to be. And I think they still need to get much better at the skill positions.
$30 million. I didn't hate the Connor McGovern signing. We talked about Brian Poole last week, but I didn't hate the Connor McGovern signing. How crazy is it there are two offensive linemen named Connor McGovern endlessly? Confusing to me.
Neither of them are named Conor McGregor, which is what I think every time that's about to be said.
Two of the Rams games I did were Dallas and then Denver back to back, and I just kept looking at Andy Sasana and saying, "This isn't right, right? Like this is a typo. This can't be real, but it is real." Is that the first same name, same position group in?
I want to. There was a. Oh man, what was the guy's name? Jake Byrne? Was it Jake Byrne? Yes. The Miami and Wisconsin both had tight ends named Jake Byrne, and they played against each other in a bowl game.
Last question is from Big C Ballin. How do the Eagles find receivers going forward, and which Joe Exotic farmhand would you like to befriend? Well, we already talked about the farmhands. I like them all. I like the SVP looking one. As far as the Eagles receivers, so I really liked what the Eagles have done in free agency. Shocker, good teams continue to do good things. They really addressed a lot of issues on the defense, less so on offense. So one gets the sense they're going to really target it in the draft, I suppose. Though they pick somewhere in the 20s, but again, this is a great wide receiver draft, yada, yada. Do you think that that will be enough, that they didn't go out and sign a flashy free agent wide receiver? Of course, DeSean Jackson, who is my age, comes back.
Isn't that the depressing part of it all, when someone is your age and they're considered washed?
Do you think...
It's bad.
Oh, by the way, Alshon Jeffrey's still on the Eagles. I just remembered that.
Yeah.
That's weird. Because he was being talked about as like the obvious immediate trade.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah, well. Okay, so I like the Slay pickup. Maybe Byron Jones is a better option, but he sounds like he wanted to go straight to Miami, which I understand. He gave up a little bit for Slay, pay him a lot of money. He's older, but I still like that. And one of the things the PFF guys talk a lot about is how there's real value in positions where there's volatility, and cornerback is one of those. So Slay had a dip in coverage last year, but that can easily bounce back. So I think that they probably will end up getting okay value from him, especially the first 2 years. I think the Eagles are having a nice offseason. I still think that they have to get one more weapon. They have to get healthy. I mean, they won the division last year. I think that we all have collectively forgotten about what a disaster the NFC East was last year, but at the end of the day, they did win the division.
I think
they still have the coaching staff. Wentz is fine. I'm okay. I'm okay with what they're doing. I think they've got a chance to repeat. I just don't see them contending for the NFC unless they do.
They should draft two wide receivers early.
Yes.
But yeah, they're going to be good. I haven't decided whether I think them or the Cowboys are going to be better next year. I think the Cowboys are going to be a lot better. Last question.
They both have areas where they could hugely improve.
Right.
One is that the Cowboys got better at coach, I assume, and the Eagles can just have better injury luck. And both of those things can literally make them an NFC contender.
Cowboys also had some bad
almost overnight.
Cowboys also had some bad football luck too, right? Like they were the team where like all of the underlying metrics said they should have been better than they were. And had some a lot of it I think was coaching and culture and weird stuff. So I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Jason Garrett for you.
I haven't decided. Final question before I do my questions for you. This is a great question. Real Jazzy G wants to know, what's the first thing each one of you will do once we return to normalcy? It's a great question. Go to a restaurant, I guess.
Yeah, go to a restaurant. Have a beer at a restaurant with my wife, probably.
All right.
Or do an in-person podcast.
An in-person podcast. Oh, such a thing. All right, let's take a quick break. And then, as always, I've got 5 questions for Kevin.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. Get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. If you are not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option, and listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code MENA. So why not start today? Go to betterhelp.com/MENA. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. BetterHelp.com/MENA.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question one. Have you ever thought about getting a dog?
No.
Judge
me expand. I'm just not, that's not a dog. I'm not a huge dog person. And my, I travel a lot as you, but I just, it's a lot of work. Maybe in the future, but I've never, ever even come within the realm of possibility for me.
I don't know what to say. Question two. I know you're a big reader. Can you recommend a book to listeners to the show?
Oh my gosh. All right. So I said this on Twitter 2 weeks ago. There's a really good book called Ghost Map that is applies to our times about the cholera epidemic in the 1860s in London. Mm. I really liked and how they figured out what the actual problem was. I would say that, I read The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes on Sunday, and I really liked it.
Like,
but that's, I hesitate to recommend fiction to anybody because it's just not – it's just not my, I don't know. Everybody's
no,
different.
I like Julian.
I would say from a football standpoint, I'm a huge fan of like super basic British authors like Julian Barnes and Ian McEwan and Martin Amis. Things that are really, seem really basic if you're in London, but in America seem oddly exotic. And I would say that, from a football standpoint, the Bringing the Heat by Mark Bowden is probably the best football book ever written.
Really?
So it's about the early 90s Eagles. Mark Bowden is the guy who wrote Black Hawk Down and Killing Pablo and a bunch of like crazy narratives about war and drug wars and all that stuff. And he was on the early 90s Eagles beat almost as an experiment. Like he was already an awesome reporter. And they put him on the beat just to be like, what'll happen? And this is like after Reggie White had left, but there were still stories about him. Buddy Ryan had left as coach, but there's still stories about him. Randall Cunningham was quarterback. Like tons of, you know, it was Philadelphia. It was tons of, these guys were getting money for the first time in history because of free agency. You know, just the talk radio. Rich Kotite was the head coach of the team in question. Jerome Brown just died. Like, it is a crazy look at football in the early 90s, and I really, really, really enjoy it. And because I think football has a bit of a history problem, in the sense, like, I don't think we sit around, like, other sports talking about, like, oh, 91 Eagle, that was crazy. Like, I don't think we do that enough. And because of that, I think it's kind of gotten lost in the cracks. Mm. Mm.
Have you read Collision Lacrossers?
I have.
Sounds kind of similar. Question three. What's your favorite move of all of free agency? It doesn't have to be what you think is the best, just one that you're very intrigued by and excited to see play out.
Has to be a signing, right?
Yeah, one that, not like, you know, obviously like the Hopkins trade is one of the most lopsided, but like something that you're like, I can't wait to see this.
I think, yeah. Great question. This is a weird one. I can't wait to see what the Dolphins look like next year with Byron Jones and Xavier Howard.
Yeah.
Because I think it's kind of a Belichickian move to have those two defensive backs back there. It is upsetting to me that they traded Minkah Fitzpatrick because
that they'd be so good.
They'd be so good back there.
I was really interested.
But I kind of like what they did.
No, I was super interested in seeing the Chris Harris, like how they he just came out today and said that he was told he's going to play in the slot. Because I wasn't you know, with Desmond King and the Chargers, I wasn't sure where they would use him. And also that Chargers right now can basically, I've been saying, play positionless basketball back there. Like they could do whatever they want with those players. People have been mocking Isaiah Simmons to them, which makes no sense really, but is also absolutely bonkers. And I really want it to happen, even though it won't, for that reason, right? Like just imagine a defense where you've got six guys and you're just, they can play all the positions. Like I love that idea, but sounds like Chris Harris.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I would also say under the radar trade because it happened early, like the Ravens just crushing and getting Calais Campbell and then just going about their business. I mean, that's just what good teams do.
So I think the Ravens, like as good as they were, you know, kind of like low-key had a little bit of an issue with run defense. And I think they made a few adjustments in response to that. Question four.
That's why you don't waste draft picks, because sometimes Calais Campbell's available.
Don't draft for need. Question four. If you had to be quarantined with one quarterback, who would you choose?
Woof. great question. So we're in a, like, I'm in my house now, but instead of my wife, it's just a quarterback, right? Is that out there?
Or your wife could be there too.
I would say, okay. So I would say it would be someone who's good at video games, because I don't think – or someone who just really wants to play, like, FIFA with me. Like, that would be my number one requirement. Or we have the same taste. If you're going taste in movies and TV, you'd go Aaron Rodgers, because you would just sit around and binge.
Yeah,
you know,
but you're not choosing Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not choosing Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Although, if you're going purely on what we're binging, you're choosing Aaron Rodgers.
But, like, thinking through the quarantine, what that really means.
Yeah. No, I know. I would say there's a possibility of, like, you know, hit some golf balls with your quarantine buddy. I think that's a possibility. Said there's a lot of people on the, you know, Sam Bradford is an elite golfer, for instance. Kirk Cousins, a huge history documentary guy, so you can get that. And again, not going to pick Kirk Cousins. Jeez. I'm going to pick. Is Russell Wilson a good answer here?
Yeah, like he's really nice.
They're all kind of dorky. They're all kind of dorky. Who's playing FIFA with me?
I feel like, who would be fun and cool? I didn't think through this.
Stafford's out. Stafford's not going to do it. He's not going to play FIFA with me.
Yeah, Baker would play a lot of FIFA with you. But, you know, I will say Baker is very interpersonally pleasant. So he actually would be like a sneaky good quarantine hang.
I like them all as a people. And I like Stafford as a person. I would say Mahomes probably.
Oh, Mahomes. Cool. Mahomes seems so nice.
But Mahomes is a 2K guy. Yeah, he's a 2K guy.
But doesn't he seem...
I mean, and all I care about...
He seems super sunshiny. He's too nice. Everybody likes him.
So is that in his favor or against
him? Yeah, you never hear people saying, wow, Pat Mahomes.
Oh, right. That guy. No, he's a great person.
Everybody likes him.
Let me tell you a little observation I've gathered over the past 5 years of access profiles. Most people who rise to the top of of team sports are usually generally good people. Like there's like quarterbacks. Like I feel like the intangible and the leadership part of it is such a big thing that I never come away with a meeting from a quarterback being like, that is the worst person I've ever met in my life. And you do get that with guys who are like more, who are not as good. The guys who become elite for like 15 years, they're usually like well-adjusted people.
I think that's a good take.
I think there's people who get really good for 3 years who then burn out because they're dickheads.
No, yeah, even someone like a Tom Brady who is like fairly inaccessible as a human being, you always hear like is a good teammate and is pleasant to be around. You know what I mean? Like it's pretty hard to be a massive jerk and have longevity in a team sport. I think that's fair.
Right. I think there's some guys who will like who are flash in the pans or even have like, you know, are good enough to get one huge contract who can be huge jerks. But I feel like the majority of people who have awesome careers are more of your Patrick Mahomes types who are just good dudes who are pleasant to be around. Or they accept the responsibility of what's been given to them, which is that they basically become the mayors of their town.
Speaking of mayors, last question as always comes from the mayor of this household, Lenny. It's pretty simple. He wants to know why you spoiled Uncut Gems for us.
That was not me.
You did. You spoiled it for me.
No, that was
news. Tell the class how.
Oh, wait. For you specifically, I'm sorry. For you, let's back up here. I spoiled it for you, Mina Kimes, because I was telling. So you came on the lot, and we were hanging out. And it was me, you, and Jason Gallagher, and we were just, you know, BSing. And people kept referencing the Uncut Gems thing. And I told you the story about how everybody was mad at Robert Mays for spoiling Uncut Gems on the podcast. I'm not going to do it here. And then in this retelling of the story to you on a lot, not on the podcast, I accidentally, without thinking, spoiled it for you.